We'll open the Sefer Devarim and I believe actually have what to think about for quite some time. One of the most important questions that is raised by Sefer Devarim, and it is one that we have voiced on a number of occasions, is how to navigate between two statements in the Talmud with regards to Moshe Rabbeinu's relationship to the Torah, his role in the giving of the Torah. And we begin by referring to a statement in the Talmud in Masechet Sanhedrin, Daf Tzedek Tes Amud Aleph. That is the chapter called Peret Chelek, so called after the opening Mishnah, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lem Chelek Le'olam Haba. And that Mishnah, as we know, has a continuation, for every rule has exceptions. And the rule of Kol Yisrael Yesh Lem Chelek Le'olam Haba has a number of exceptions, Ve'ele She'elem Chelek Le'olam Haba. And one of them, says the Mishnah, is Ha'omer Ein Torah Min HaShamayim. If a person denies the divine origin of the Torah, so he's out. What exactly is entailed, incorporated, within this category of Ein Torah Min HaShamayim? Does it mean that he denies the whole thing, half of it, part of it? So the Talmud stresses, in no uncertain terms, that if a person states that the entire Torah is given by God, with the exception of even one pasuk or less that was the addition of Moshe Rabbeinu, he is already in this very unfortunate category of Ha'omer Ein Torah Min HaShamayim. And what that means is the axiom, it's one of the Yud Gimel Ikrim of the Rambam, even those who have fewer Ikrim than the Rambam consider this to be one of those Ikrim. The Sefer Ikrim considers three basic principles to incorporate everything, but one of those three is Torah Min HaShamayim. It is the basis of everything. That said, we now move to a section of the Talmud elsewhere in Maseches Megillah, Daf Lamed Aleph Omud Beis, which is discussing the halachas of Kriyas HaTorah. For there, the Mishnah is talking about what it refers to as the klolos, the curses, that's what we would call the tochacha. And the Mishnah tells us, Ein mafsikin beklolos. One cannot interrupt in the middle of the tochacha and call someone else to the Torah. Whoever is called to the Torah for the beginning, he sees the whole thing through. You cannot stop in the middle and call up somebody else. Okay. The rate some shuls read the tochacha, by the way, by the time he got to the bima, the whole thing would be over anyway. But in principle, it is unacceptable. Why? The Talmud explains. The pasuk says in Mishlei, Musar Hashem bini altimas. Not to degrade Musar, the chastisement of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he's in the middle of telling you a tochacha, that's not the time to make him a Mishaberach. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving you the tochacha, it's a time to pay attention, not a time to think is it someone's anniversary or bar mitzvah or any of the above. And this is well known, it's halacha l'maisa. What is less well known is that actually the Gemara makes a distinction with regards to this halacha between the two tochachas of the Torah. For as we know, there are two. There is the first one in the end of Chumash Vayikra, in Parshas Bichukosai. And there is another tochacha in Sefer Dvarim, in Parshas Kisava. And lo and behold, the Gemara tells us in Megillah there, Daf Lamed Aleph, that the problem of interrupting the tochacha only exists with regards to the first tochacha. The tochacha in Chumash Vayikra. But as regards the second tochacha in Chumash Devarim, there is no problem to interrupt. Now, you may not have seen this because, of course, Minhag Yisrael is not to interrupt in either, for very understandable reasons. But in principle, it is possible to call someone in the middle of the second tochacha. And the question is why? A tochacha is a tochacha. What's the difference between them? The Gemara actually highlights two differences. One is that the first tochacha is said in the plural, as we know, Vehevesi Alechem, Imbechukos Haitim Osu, and thus represents, it seems, a more widespread disaster, which means that it's a relatively more serious thing, as opposed to the tochacha in Chumash Vayikra, Chumash Devarim, which is in the singular, Im Lo Tishma, Yisa Hashem Alecha, which seems to refer more to the individual, and the individual's tragedy is not to the same magnitude as the community's tragedy. That's one distinction. But the second distinction, which is material for us, is, and these are the words of the Gemara, Klolo Shebetaras Kohanim, the tochacha in Chumash Vayikra, Moshe mipi HaKadosh Baruch Hu Amara. Moshe said it from Hashem. As opposed to the klalos of the Mishnah Torah in Chumash Devarim, Moshe mipi Atzmo Amara. He said them from himself. And just to finish the sentence, and therefore, when the Pasuk says, it's a fine distinction, right? But Musar Hashem bini altim az, that refers to the first tochacha that Moshe saying it from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's Musar Hashem. But the second tochacha is Moshe mipi atzmo amar, and from himself. As we can appreciate, these words will need to be understood very carefully, because we will need to understand why the Gemara in Megillah isn't violating one of the worst things that can be said as far as the Gemara in Sanhedrin is concerned, to say that any portion of the Torah, even a pasuk or less, is coming from Moshe, not coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's already Ein Torah Min HaShamayim. And lo and behold, something that sounds like that is actually finds its way into the halacha. So there is no question that this is of the most sensitive of issues and needs to be understood very well. I believe the place to start here is referring to a comment that is made by the Dubna Magid. And the Dubna Magid, although he's famous for telling stories, which he was, and rightly so, we should not underestimate him. There was a great deal more to him than telling stories. He was a world-class Talmud Chacham, and he was a colleague of the Vilna Gaon. And he used to visit the Gaon, and the Vilna Gaon used to invite him, actually, to speak with him in matters of Musar. So, he's okay. He refers to the Gaon as his Rebbe, and he says as follows. This is from the Sefer Ohel Yaakov. It's just a few lines, and important to hear his words. Sha'alti SP Moriv Rabbi. I asked my Rebbe, Hu Rabbeinu HaKadosh, HaGaon, HaChosid, Moreinu HaRav, Elio, Mivilna, Zeche Tzadik Livroch. That's the Vilna Gaon. It's very nice to hear all of these terms and know that they are all used in moderation with regards to the Vilna Gaon. I asked him, Ma HaHevdel Bein HaTorah HaKadosha Uvein Mishnah Torah. It's a very mysterious entity, Mishnah Torah, repetition of the Torah. That's the name that is attached to Chumash Devarim. Is there any qualitative or characteristic difference that we can ascribe to Chumash Devarim as opposed to the first four Chumashim? And that's a question for the Gaon. For Omarli, he said to me as follows. Ki ha'arba svarim harishonim, the first four chumashim, hayu nishma'im mipi HaKadosh Baruch Hu ba'atzmo derech grono shel Moshe. There is a concept that is well known. It's from the Zohar HaKadosh, but it's a... And that is the concept of shchina midaberes mitoch grono shel Moshe. That the divine presence speaks through the mouth, through the throat of Moshe. The Vilna Gaon here is saying that this phenomenon pertains specifically to the first four Chumashim. Lokein Sefer Devarim. That is where Devarim differs from the first four Chumashim. The phenomenon of Shechina Medaberes Mitoch Grono, for some reason, which is not elaborated upon, was not there. This, I think, gives added significance to the simplest understanding, the simplest translation of the opening of Chumash Devarim, which is Eile Devarim Asher Diber Moshe. As simple as can be, that is already a development. Because for Moshe himself to be talking in a way that anyone else would be talking, that is actually a chiddush of Chumash Devarim. When it comes to the contents of Devarim, Hayu Yisrael, Shomim is Divrei HaSefer HaZeh, they would hear the content of the Sefer, Ka'asher Shomu Divrei HaNaviim Asher Achar Moshe. In the same dynamic as the Jewish people would hear Nevuos from the Nevi'im after Moshe. How did it go? It's a two-stage process. Asher HaKadosh Baruch Hu Omer El HaNavi Hayom. Today, Hashem communicates to the Navi. Uliyom Machar, and tomorrow, Halach HaNavi V'Hishmia Chazon El Yisrael. And then tomorrow, the Navi will communicate and give over what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him yesterday. V'im Kein. If that is the case, Be'es Asher Dibre HaNavi El Ha'am, then at the time the Navi is speaking, Kfar Hu Ne'etak Mimenu Hadibur Ha'eloki. That means HaKadosh Baruch Hu's communication to the Navi is over. That's in the past, and now he is giving it over in the second stage. That is Chumash Devarim. Eile HaDvarim Asher Diber Moshe. And interestingly, the Dubna Magid himself offers an explanation as to why this is. Why should the phenomenon of Shechina Medaberes B'Toch Grono, which seems to be the highest level that a Navi can reach, where there is a certain simultaneity of receiving and communicating so that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is speaking through him, our understanding is that Moshe Rabbeinu's Madrega only rises higher and higher, but it seems to have curved backwards at Chumash Devarim and gone. But the Dubna Magid said the reason why is because the entire institution, shall we say, the entire concept of Shechina Medaberes Midoch Grono was necessary in order for the Jewish people to be aware that what Moshe Rabbeinu is telling them is absolute emes. In other words, it is known that Moshe naturally is kvad lashon u'kvad peh. Anytime he speaks to them normally, they'll know what he sounds like. As soon as he is taken over by Shechina Medaberes B'toch Grono, so people understand that what is being said to them is directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's the basis of Tariag Mitzvahs. So all of this is part of the concept of V'gam B'choya Aminu Le'olam. It's necessary to instill and install within the Jewish people the acceptance of Tariag Mitzvahs. That happens in no uncertain terms through the concept of the Divine Presence talking through Moshe's throat. That being the case, says the Dubna Magid, it may very well be that that was no longer necessary at the time of Mishneh Torah. For Mishneh Torah largely is a repetition of the Torah, of course, with the significance of what that repetition entails, but it is no longer critical to have that mode of transmission so that the Jewish people are accepting the Torah. Acceptance of the Torah has happened. Now we are reviewing the Torah. Moshe is no longer required to have this unusual quality of Shechina Medaberes Mitoch Grono, which is an interesting addition of the Dubna Magid himself. We should know that this major distinction of the Vilna Gaon, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu talking through Moshe for the first four Chumashim and to Moshe in the final Chumash, has preceded the Vilna Gaon somewhat, in an approximate form, for it is also to be found in the writings of the Maharal, in the Sefer Tiferes Yisrael, in Perek Mem Gimel. And there, the Maharal actually draws our attention to a pasuk in the Chumash, which seems to express this phenomena clearly. At the time of Matan Torah, the pasuk states, Moshe yidaber, v'ha Elokim ya'anenu b'kol. Moshe speaks, who gives him the ability to be heard. He gives him the voice to be heard. Moshe yidaber, v'elokim anenu b'kol. According to the Maharal, this is the source in the Torah for the phenomenon that HaKadosh Baruch Hu amplifies the voice of Moshe in a way that he is speaking through Moshe. And the Maharal as well concurs with the distinction of the Vilna Gaon that this is true for the first four Chumashim, but not for the fifth. But what's most interesting is he has a different explanation as to why things should change. and this is part of a general theme that the Maharal develops in a number of places, and that is the giving of the Torah. It sounds somewhat abstract, but the giving of the Torah, as anything that is given, starts with the giver, and then there is the object itself, and then there is the receiver. The giving of the Torah also has this flow to it. And it begins with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and giving, and then it ends with the Jewish people receiving. Now, whereas we look at the Torah as one homogeneous entity that was given and then received, but the Maharal says there is an aspect of the transition from giving to receiving that exists even within the Torah. For within the first four Chumashim, the giving element is dominant. And in Chumash Devarim, the receiving element is dominant. And that is manifest in a number of ways. We find, for example, in Chumash Devarim is the first time that the Pasuk states that Moshe sets about explaining the Torah to Bnei Yisrael. It's Perek Aleph, Pasuk Hei. Eva Yadin, Ho'il Moshe, Be'er es HaTorah Hazos. Explanation is required in order for the listener to absorb. Whatever has been given has been given, even without explanation. The explanation is in terms of being able to receive and to imbibe. And moreover, says Maharal, still very, very subtle but major shift, the role of Moshe Rabbeinu has gone over from being aligned with the giver to being aligned with the receiver. In the first four Chumashim, where the giving is dominant, so Moshe actually represents the giver, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is speaking to the Bnei Yisrael through Moshe. But he shifts sides, so to speak, for Chumash Devarim to represent the receivers, because he is now the first of the Jewish people to receive on their behalf and then communicates it to them. So that's the Maharal, Lefi Darko. But what's interesting is a different explanation than the Dubna Magid, but this key difference of how Moshe received and communicated between the first four Chumashim and the fifth Chumash. And in fact, says Maharal, this is the meaning of that Gemara in Megillah about the Tochacha, which told us that as true as it is that you cannot interrupt in the middle of the Tochacha, that is only said with regards to the Tochacha in Vayikra, not the Tochacha in Devarim. Because the Tochacha in Vayikra, and let's pay careful attention to the words now, they'll have a different nuance. The Tochacha in Vayikra, Moshe mipi ha-gevura amara. Literally, Moshe said it from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mouth. Mipi ha-gevura. That's the Tochacha in Devarim. Moshe mipi asmo amara. Moshe said it from his own mouth, says the Maharal. No one is talking here about the origins of where it came from. The Gemara Sanhedrin tells us the Torah comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the question is, what was the experience? It was about the imminence of the experience of hearing it. When they heard the first Tochacha, they heard it mipi ha-gevura, because when Moshe opens his mouth, HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks through him. That's a Tochacha that you cannot interrupt. That is a higher level of directness in terms of being confronted by the Tochacha. That is not the same in Devarim, where by the time Moshe spoke to Bnei Yisrael, he had heard it yesterday and then gave it over. It's mipi atzmo. The origins are the same, but the nature of the Bnei Yisrael hearing it, that is what changes. That is how the Maharal explains the Gemara, and these are important things to be aware of. We should know that this distinction of the Vilna Gaon and before him the Maharal between the first four Chumashim and Devarim is not shared by everyone. And one of those who seems to dissent and see things differently is a Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, Reb Chaim Vilojin, in the Sefer Nefesh HaChaim in Shar Gimel. And in his understanding, the concept of Shechina Medaberes Mitoch Grono did not desist in Chumash Devarim, but actually continued and reached a higher point that it had earlier on. And he brings a proof. His proof is something that we say every day, but I wonder if we ever took notice of the following. The second parsha of Kriyat Shema begins. אשר אנוכי מצב אתכם היום, לאהב את השם אלוקיכם ולעובדו בכל לבבכם ובכל נפשכם. So far, so good. Who is talking? Moshe. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mentioned in that pasuk in the third person. Moshe is saying, if you hear everything I'm commanding you, le'av es Hashem Elokeichem ule'avdo. It says Moshe talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The very next pasuk, without any announcement, shifts into the first person on the part of the giver. V'nosati metar atzechem bi'ito yireh ul'makosh. That's amazing. Moshe does not have the power to give rain. And he doesn't mean that. The only one who can say V'nosati metar atzechem bi'ito is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what's happened within the second parsha is, seamlessly, Moshe has moved from the third person and between one pasuk and the next developed into a vehicle through which HaKadosh Baruch Hu to speak. Which is a very interesting way of looking at that parsha. It happens to be the only way. Grammatically. Pasuk 1, Moshe is talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Pasuk 2, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is talking through Moshe. Moshe starts off by saying, to love Hashem. Next pasuk, Hashem says, I will give you rain. But Moshe is not quoting anyone. And here we see, it seems, without any room for any alternative interpretation, the concept of Shechina medaberes bitoch grona. And that is the proof of Reb Chaim Mivolozhin. And it would seem to be rather troublesome, for want of a better word, for the Vilna Gaon, because the Vilna Gaon says, we don't have that in Chumash Devarim, because things are different now. What about this proof of Reb Chaim Mivolozhin? I wonder, perhaps, whether an answer could be based on the comments of the Rashba in his commentary to Maseches Menachos Daf Lamed Hey Amud Beis. There are discussions as to whether what's called the Rashba on Menachos is the Rashba. Either way, he's close enough to the Rashba and eminent enough to be confused with the Rashba, and for us, that's enough. One of the first mitzvahs that the Jewish people received when they left Mitzrayim was tefillin. The first time they're commanded, actually, is on the day that they leave. The first two times that tefillin is mentioned is in Shemos, Perek Yud Gimel, Kaddish Li Kol Bechor, and Vayaki Yaviecha, which are two of the parshas that are in tefillin. So tefillin is a mitzvah that they had very early on. In fact, it's very interesting that there are certain parts of the tefillah that, you know, they're piyutim and we say them regularly, but don't always stop to ponder them. In the Hoshanos on Sukkos, when we finish the Hoshanos, so there is a piyut that follows the Seder of the Aleph Beis, Koshata Eilim Beludi Mach B'tzeisa Liyesha Amach, that's how it goes. Difficult to concentrate sometimes because you need to avoid damage from lulavs from your right and your left, but the words are there. And Tes and Yud, Kehushata Tevuim Bitzul Gezorim, as you saved Tevuim, those that were sinking or liable to sink, Bitzul Gezorim, in the depths of the Gezorim is Yamsuf, that goes the Yamsuf Lekzorim. So it's a reference to saving the Jewish people in the Yamsuf, Tevuim Bitzul Gezorim, Yekarcha Ima Ma'avirim, while they were carrying with them your Yakar. Yakar is glory. Says Rabbi Shmuel Leib Diskin, the word Yakar has a specific connotation in Chazal. For as we know, when Megillas Esther, Laihudim Oysa Ur V'Simcha V'Sosan V'Yakar, each one of those terms has a definition attached to it, and the definition of Yakar is Tfilin, Kishem Hashem Nikra Alecha. And therefore, says Mariel Diskin, the Pasuk said, when the Pasuk talks about Kriyas Yamsuf and says, the piyut, yekarcha ima ma'avirim, they carried your yakar, that is a reference to the fact that they were already had in their possession tefillin, because it is a mitzvah that they'd received already. That's the pshat in the siddur. Now what's interesting is, says the Rashba, or the Chidushim ascribed to the Rashba, we have a curious situation on our hands, because tefillin require four parshas in order to be kosher. Two of them are from the end of Parshas Bo, And the other two are Shema and the Hayam Shamon. Now the question is, when did the Jewish people hear these two paragraphs for the first time? If we say that they didn't hear these paragraphs until the point that they're written in the Chumash, that means, aside from the fact that apparently they did not fulfill the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema for the first 40 years, for some reason, but it also means that they had no kosher tefillin, because tefillin without all four parshas are possible. Therefore, says the Rashba, it is clear that all of these four parshas were known to the Jewish people, and they were put into their tefillin. There are various reasons why two of the paragraphs were only written in the Torah in Chumash Devarim. But that's a separate question. It is a broader discussion as to why there are certain things that are only written in Devarim, where we know that they were known to the Jewish people before. Everybody understands, regardless of whether it's general principles or details, that all of the 613 mitzvahs were known to the Jewish people from Sinai. Is it only Klalim at Sinai and maybe Pratim in Ohel Moed, which is also has passed by the time Chumash Devarim happens? Or maybe even Klalim and Pratim at Sinai? That's a machlokas, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel. But the point is that they know the corpus of 613 mitzvahs. Now there are dozens of these 613 mitzvahs that will not be mentioned before Chumash Devarim. So now the question is, well, it must be that they knew them, and therefore what defers the writing doesn't indicate the time the Jewish people came to know them. It's another question. Why is it that the encrypting into the Torah, Shebichtav, into the text of the Torah of certain mitzvahs happened much later, even though they were known to them Balpeh earlier on? This is no different. These two parshas, according to the Rashba. And where this leaves us is, it could be this is part of the response of the Vilna Gaon to the proof of Reb Chaim Volozhin. Because Reb Chaim Volozhin sought to prove from the second parsha of Kriyat Shema that in Chumash Devarim Moshe achieves this level of Shkinim and Aberes B'toch Grono, it could be based on this Rashba that paragraph isn't a faithful example of the situation as it is in Chumash Devarim, for the simple reason that this text actually existed much earlier on. It had been known to the Jewish people and was part of their tefillin 40 years before. And therefore, it's not an indication of the atmosphere of Chumash Devarim per se. It came from before and was only put in at this later stage. So if that's the only proof, that may be part of the defense. But more than that, of course, we hesitate to say. So these are very important discussions as we open Chumash Devarim, how to open it, what to make of it, how to field these statements of Chazal with regards to the two tochachas. And now, what I would like to do is to take a look at a Rashi and spend quite some time on the Rashi, because that's what Rashi deserves. And it's in Perek Aleph, Pasuk Aleph. I don't know if we'll get past the first Pasuk today. If we read the Pasuk, Eina Hadvarim, Asher Dibre Moshe El Kol Yisrael Be'Eva HaYardin. These are the words that Moshe said to Bnei Yisrael on the other side of the Yardin. Ba'midbar, Ba'rava, Mosuf, Ben Parana, Ben Tofa, Ve'Lavon, Ve'Chatziris, Ve'Dizahav. What we have before us here is a number of places, and having prefaced by saying that Moshe said all of this Be'Eva HaYardin, all of those other places become geographically obsolete. And that is why Rashi explains that all of these places are references to locations where the Jewish people made mistakes. And Sefer Devarim begins with Tochecha, begins with rebuke. There's a great deal of rebuke in Chumash Devarim. But the way that Moshe opened the rebuke was in a very bechavadika way, not to confront the Jewish people head on and in graphic detail discuss all of their shortcomings, but rather the opening which set the tone for the rebuke was much more oblique, much more circumspect, and much more bechavadik for the Jewish people, and therefore he mentioned places, and v'hameivin yovin. That's how it starts. Before too long, certain episodes will be opened up blow by blow, but the way that it's opened is that way. And Rashi, who follows all of these places, informs us what it was that happened in each location. And towards the end of the pasuk, we have a place called Chatzeros, and Rashi says on the words Vachatzeros, b'machlokoso shel Korach. This is a reference to the machlokas of Korach. Fine. The Torah doesn't openly say where the machlokas of Korach happened. It just tells us what happened. And now Rashi is telling us that it happened in a place called Chatzeros. Nothing seems to be amiss until we look at the relevant psukim. And when we do, we will see that there is a lot of understanding that needs to take place. For the end of Parshas Ba'alo Sechar, the Jewish people are in Chatzeros. As the final chapter, that's where the episode with Miriam happens, Vatitaber Miriam Va'aron, that's their in Chatzeros at that place. And then Miriam gets her tzaras, and then they wait 7 days, and then the final pasuk is, the final pasuk of Ba'alo Sechar, Ve'achar nosu'u ha'am mechatzeros v'yachanu b'midbar Paran. And then they moved on from Chatzeros to Midbar Paran. What happens in Midbar Paran? That's where the episode of the Meraglim, which is the next parsha, Shelach v'yishlach osam Moshe mi-Midbar Paran. Okay. So clearly, the first location is Chatzeros, and they moved from there to the second location of Midbar Paran, and that's when they sent Meraglim. Now, if that's true, then it will turn out that Rashi is telling us that the machlokas of Korach, the episode of Korach, happened before the Meraglim. Because Rashi associated it with Chatzeros, and Chatzeros is where they journeyed from to get to the place they sent Meraglim from. So if Korach is Chatzeros, then apparently Korach happened before the Meraglim. Now, do we have any reason to object to that? Do we have any reason to assert that that's not the case? Not necessarily. It happens to be that Parshas Korach is written in the Torah after Shelach, but as we know, Ein Mukdam U'Me'uchar B'Torah, that is not an ironclad proof that that is the chronological sequence of events. So nothing is necessarily out of order, meaning conceptually, because it might be out of order chronologically. The problem is, Rashi himself seems to indicate that that's not the case. For in the beginning of Parshas Korach, when Korach comes with his men, and they're saying, Ki kol ha'elo kulam kadoshim, why are you lording over us? We're all holy, etc., etc. Moshe's response is very pessimistic. Perek Tet Zayin Pasuk Dalet, Vayishma Moshe, Vayipol al Ponov. Means it looks like he momentarily gave up or despaired. That's how Rashi understands it. Vayipol al Ponov. Says Rashi, Mipnei machlokas, because of this machlokas, it was too much. Shekvar ze biyodam sirchon ravi, this is their fourth disaster. How so? Chotu be'egel, well, they made a mistake in the egel, Moshe davened for them, vayichal Moshe. Number two, b'misonanim, with the, in Parshas Ba'alo Sechar, vayam k'misonanim, vayispala Moshe. Number three, says Rashi, b'meraglim, that was their third disaster. And Moshe responded, Vayomer Moshe el Hashem v'shomu Mitzrayim. Moshe davens for them. What will it be like if Mitzrayim hears it's a chil Hashem? Please forgive them. And machlokos shel Korach nisrash lu yodav. Machlokos of Korach, it was too much. As they say in modern Hebrew poetry, yesh gevul. It was too much. What we see from Rashi here is that Rashi himself clearly identifies the sequence of events as first Meraglim, which was disaster number three, and then Korach disaster number four. What now will we do when Rashi has identified the machlokas of Korach with Chatzeros that happened before they ever got to, which is where they were before they ever got to send the Meraglim? This is the kasha of the Mizrahi. Rav Eliyahu Mizrahi, the great primary commentator on Rashi. And his answer is, I think, something that you need to be the Mizrahi to say. But the answer is, or first response is, V'shema agodos chalukos heim. It could be that these, in fact, are conflicting interpretations. What does the Mizrahi mean by this? Mizrahi is telling us that he retains the possibility in his understanding of Rashi's methodology that Rashi's job is to explain every pasuk, and we know that Rashi's perush goes pasuk by pasuk. It's not a sweeping look through the perush, it is pasuk by pasuk, and even certain pieces of psukim, one at a time. Each pasuk and each dibur Rashi would explain to you in what he considers to be the most correct and straightforward way. Says the Mizrahi, could it be, therefore, that sometimes you will have a situation where on the one place Rashi seems to have considered one pasuk to indicate a certain sequence of events and another pasuk another sequence of events? Could that be? The answer, says the Mizrahi, is it certainly could. And the reason why is because Rashi's job is to explain to you what is the simple meaning of the pasuk. It could be that when we put it all together, we will need to make a reckoning. And we will conclude in Rashi's mind that one of these two psukim is not to be understood in its most simple way. And that happens sometimes. As far as Rashi is concerned, what happens at the very first pasuk in the Torah? Bereshis bara Elokim, says Rashi, and as his first offering to his comment in Pshuto Shel Mikra, Ein HaMikra Zeh Omer Ela Darsheni. There's no pshat here readily available in this first pasuk. You have to darshan it. That's his first ever comment in the Torah, in the course of his commentary on Derech HaPshat. And what Rashi is telling you is, because sometimes the pshat is much harder to yield from the pasuk than the drash. Bereishis bara Elokim is almost impossible to translate. And if you think it's easy, then you certainly miss the point. It doesn't mean in the beginning. Bereishis is a construct. It doesn't have a noun that's attached to it. It's difficult. And therefore Rashi says, wherever possible, I will give you what I consider to be the straightforward pshat. Be aware that in light of the straightforward pshat somewhere else, it could be that the correct interpretation is not the most straightforward to this pasuk. And that's how it goes sometimes. But Rashi's job is not to pick up all the pieces by the time everything's finished, just to give us all the pieces. That's a very major statement about the nature of Rashi's perush on the Torah. So says the Mizrahi. And therefore, just to be clear on what the Mizrahi is saying, it may very well be that in one place in Torah, Rashi understands that the psukim are best understood if we follow the sequence of Meraglim and then Korach. That's how Rashi explains in Korach. Vayishma Moshe, Vayipal Aponov. It's too much. In another place in the Torah, Rashi understands that the straighter, the more direct approach is to see that the Korach happened before the Meraglim, and so be it. What's interesting is, it could be, some suggest, picking up the coattails of the Mizrahi here, some suggest that this understanding may help us explain another Rashi, a Rashi that we're very well familiar with. In the beginning of Parshat Shelach, the sequence of Parshas in the Torah is Baalosecha ends with the episode with Miriam, and then Shelach begins with the Meraglim, and that's that. As Parshat Shelach begins, Rashi comments on a concept called Smichus Parshios. The Torah has juxtaposed two Parshios, namely the Parsha of Meraglim to Miriam. Why? That's Rashi's question. It's a very well-known Rashi. It's the first Rashi. Lama nisbacha Parshas Meraglim, the Parshas Miriam. And Rashi responds because they saw what happened to Miriam, and Miriam said something she shouldn't have said, and she spoke Lashon Hara, and therefore they should have learned a lesson, but they didn't learn a lesson, and that's where the Torah really puts the two together. Okay. The Rashi we know. What's interesting is the Mefarshim follow Rashi and ask, why is Rashi raising this question? As surely as Rashi only ever deals with pshat issues in the pasuk, he should also only ever deal with pshat issues when it comes to the sequence of parshas. And to put that in plainer terms, that means that if Rashi is ever asking why one parsha follows the other, it means that he's bothered by the fact that one follows the other. They shouldn't follow one the other. Because if it doesn't bother you, then you wouldn't talk about it. Do you have a better idea? That's really what you have to ask. Is there another parsha that you think should be in between? And that's why you're so taken aback by this juxtaposition. There is no Rashi, for example, in the beginning of Noah. Lama nismecha parshas Noah, the parshas Bereishis. Because what else is going to be after Parshas Bereishis? No, because the next thing that happened. But if that's true, then we should ask a similar question when Rashi comments on the Meraglim. Why did the Torah put the Meraglim straight off to Miriam? What do you think about that? Says Rashi. I don't think anything about it. It's the next thing that happened. Unless there is something else that happened that somehow has been moved out of sequence in order to give me this message. But what would that thing be? Nothing else happened in Chatzeros. Say the Mefarshim, well, according to Rashi, in the beginning of Devarim, something else did happen in Chatzeros. Korach, there is no question that if it happened in Chatzeros, it's not mentioned there. Apparently it was moved out of the way to create a connection, says Rashi. Why? Lama nismecha? And the answer is whatever Rashi answers. So that's very interesting how the more Rashis we know, the more light they shed on each other. However, there are those who, firstly, as a matter of approach, prefer to see consistency within Rashi's Perush. They're not prepared for Agodos Halukos. And one of those Mefarshim is the Nachlas Yaakov. The truth is that before we get to the Nachlas Yaakov, we should be aware that the Maharal in the Gur Aryeh gives a very straightforward explanation to this Rashi. It's so straightforward, I would use with trepidation a term that I would never use with regards to the Maharal, but I think it's appropriate. It's a Balabatish Ateretz. And I've never found one of those before in the Maharal. But this is what he said, and we'll see how he backs it up. Our question is, Chatzeros? Korach happened in Chatzeros? Korach happened after the Meraglim, and they went from Chatzeros to where they sent the Meraglim. So that can't be. Says Maharal, when Rashi says that Chatzeros is a reference to Korach, it doesn't mean to say that the episode of Korach happened in Chatzeros. No. Rather, what it means is, as we mentioned before, the Torah wishes, at least initially, to communicate all of the wrongdoings of the Jewish people in an indirect way, in a respectful way, by referring to places. And the truth is that Korach happened really where they sent the Meraglim, which is Midbar Paran. But if you have two disasters in Midbar Paran, so then you can't just say the same place twice. Because it's the same place, but it has to be referring to something else. That wouldn't work, says Maharal. And therefore the Torah moved sideways to the nearest location to refer to the second disaster in Midbar Paran. Now that sounds like a very straightforward explanation, simple, shall we say. But the Maharal says, if you look at Rashi closely, you will see that in all of the other places, when it says Bamidbar, Rashi says it refers to what they did in the Midbar. Mi'ten v'sein Bamidbar. When it says Mol Suf, it refers to what they did at Yam Suf. Baravar refers to what they did by Rava. When it says, when the Pasuk says Bachatzeros, Rashi says the Machlokus of Korach. Says Maharal, if you watch Rashi carefully, you'll see this is the only place that the Pasuk talks about that when Rashi gives you the event, doesn't conclude that it happened in that place. That's very delicate. He doesn't say the Machlokus of Korach that happened in Chatzeros, because it didn't happen in Chatzeros. The Torah is using Chatzeros to bring in another wrongdoing of the Jewish people. The truth is, this relates to a very basic question with regards to this opening Rashi. Namely, what does Rashi mean when he says that out of respect for the Jewish people, he referred to places as opposed to episodes? Who is the he? Or actually, in Hebrew, the question is easier because it says Sosam. Who was Sosam? Moshe, when he spoke to them? In other words, if you were there on day one, you would have heard him say the first pasuk of Devarim. Or could it be that the Torah, when Moshe said what he said, because he had to be said, but the Torah, when it wants to open Chumash Devarim, Moshe, when he gave that speech, it was not the inaugural speech of Chumash Devarim. It's Moshe doing his job to speak to Bnei Yisrael. The Torah chose to put that speech as the beginning of Chumash Devarim. The Torah does not wish to open a Chumash in a way that's not the Chodom Shal Yisrael. And therefore Moshe may have said places. Pardon me, Moshe may have said events. The Torah says places. That's, again, a delicate question. And part of the question is, if Moshe really said these places, some of them may have been quite confusing. For those that were hearing, even assuming that they knew what happened where, but they probably got stuck when they got to Chatzeros, for example, according to the Maharal. Because when they heard Chatzeros, and even if they're clued in to the fact that every place is something that went wrong, as far as they're concerned, nothing went wrong in Chatzeros. The only person who did something wrong in Chatzeros was Miriam, on her level. Jewish people didn't do anything wrong. They only did something right. They waited for her. That's nice. So Chatzeros is confusing. And once you lose your geography in the Pasuk, so then who knows what anything means? And it's quite a gamble to take, because it's the nature of these things that indirect tochacha is often self-defining, in the sense that the people that most need to hear it are most likely to avoid it. That happens to be true even with direct tochacha. And certainly if you need Rashi to understand what's being said to you, and you don't have the Rashi, so then you are significantly more likely just to let it breeze by you. And day one, that was without mishap. Moshe Rabbeinu spoke about a number of places. It's always nice to talk about places, as long as they weren't talking about me. And that's the way it goes. There was a story told in the shtetl, where the wheat merchant basically had the entire village by the throat, because, as the Gemara says, everyone needs the wheat merchant. His prices were exorbitant, and they were pleading with him to lower the prices, and he wasn't hearing of it, and he could make a killing because he's the only wheat merchant in town. Eventually, a maggid came to town. So what's the job of the maggid? Is to give people musr. So the people of the community approached the maggid and said, please, this is the burning issue of this town. No one can take it anymore, and this is what he's doing, and it's terrible. Is there anything you can do about it? So he said, look, I'm not going to confront him directly, but we'll talk about it as the Kedarka and Shel Dvarim. I'll give a drasha and we'll talk about related issues and hopefully we'll get sorted out. So when it came to the drasha on Shabbos morning, so he got up and he spoke about the insignificance of money and how a person shouldn't be so focused on it and so much more to life and how terrible it is for a person. That's their prime goal in life, is to make as much money as they can. And everyone, of course, this is what they've been waiting for. And at the end of Shul, everyone leaves just to, preserve the good atmosphere. And the only one left in Shul is the wheat merchant. And he approaches the rabbi, and the rabbi finally got through to him. And the wheat merchant says, Rabbi, I have to thank you for your choice of topic today, because, unfortunately, the people in this village are obsessed with money. All they talk to me about is money. And they want me to lower the prices, and they have nothing else on their mind. And I really hope the message sunk in and we can return to the peaceful way. So that's the nature of these things. Asei lecha rav means it's not enough to have a rav. Asei lecha rav, because it's always easy to say that he's talking to the person, to the right and to the left. And therefore, when it comes to the delicate way that the Torah is talking, it could be that the Torah is talking about that way for us to have respect for Bnei Yisrael, but Moshe may have had to speak to the Jewish people more directly. But to come back to the Nachlas Yaakov, and this is one of the great Mefarshei Rashi, Rabbi Yaakov Selnik, and he, in a sense, puts the two together. On the one hand, he's looking to synthesize the Rashis, or more correctly, to harmonize the Rashis, whereby, on the one hand, Korah happened after the Meraglim, but it happened in Chatzeros, which is where they were before the Meraglim. It's going to take some doing. Says Nachlas Yaakov, not really. We just need to read the Psukim and see what happens. For After the Meraglim, if we take a look in Bamidbar, Perek Yud Dalet Pasuk Kath Hei. So the disaster of Meraglim has happened, and in Perek Yud Dalet Pasuk Kath Hei, Vayidaber Hashem, pardon me, Vamalek Vaknani Yoshev Ve'emek. This is Hashem talking to Moshe. These are nations that you can't take them on anymore. You're not in the correct state anymore. So machar, tomorrow, penu usu'ulachem, hamidbar derech yamsuf. So you need to take an alternative route. What does that mean? How alternative? The pasuk says penu. Penu means turn. Turn how much? Rashi says on the words penu, la'achorechem usu'ulachem. La'achorechem means turn around. Says in Achlas Yaakov. So with this Rashi in Parsha Shalach, it seems that everything is in order. Because they came from Chatzeros, and nothing had happened yet. They came to Midbar Paran, and that's when the Meraglim happened. And then they were told to turn around. Penu, usu'ulachem. As Rashi told us, penu means su'ulacharechem. La'acharechem means where you came from. They came from Chatzeros. Having gone back to Chatzeros, that's when Korach happened, after Midbar Paran. That's a very elegant, and once again, the more Rashis that are brought in, the more light they shed on each other. The Rogachov are gone. In the Tzofnas Paneach, in Parsha Shalach, actually has an eye on all of this. Because as far as he is concerned, this could help us explain something else. There is the possibility that the episode of Korach happened in Chatzeros. And by the way, this is just a suggestion, it's just a ha'ara, but I offer it for your consideration. For at the end of Parshas Ba'alosecha, that is to say, at the end of Lamed Hei, Perek Yud Aleph Pasuk Lamed Hei, which is the end of Kivros HaTava, so the Pasuk states, Mi Kivros HaTava Nasu Am Chatzeros, so from Kivros HaTava they journeyed to Chatzeros, Vayihiyu BaChatzeros, and they were in Chatzeros. Now, if we read carefully, those final two words seem to be completely redundant, because wherever they journeyed to, that's where they were until further notice. What we haven't taken into account so far is the possibility that Korach happened in Chatzeros, not in between Miriam and the Meraglim, where it doesn't seem like much happened in between, but perhaps even before the episode with Miriam. And for whatever reason, the Torah spoke about it afterwards, but there is a marker left with these words, having told you they journeyed to Chatzeros, and nothing else needs to be said, but something else is said. And they were in Chatzeros. That's telling you that something happened there. Details to follow. And then it moves on to the episode of Miriam. If indeed it's true, it could answer a question that we raised a number of weeks ago. Namely, in Parshas Shelach, they're told to send Meraglim. Who are the Meraglim? Kol Nasi Bahem, the Nasiim. That said, when we look at the names, we don't recognize them as the Nasiim. The Matei Reuven is Shamua ben Zakur, and then Shaphat ben Chari, and people that we never knew before. The question is, well, whatever happened to the Nasiim? So at the time we saw some Mefarshim say that Nasi doesn't mean the prince, but it means a volunteer, or maybe it was the Nasiim that sent them, but not those that were being sent, etc., etc. Says the Rogachov Gaon, according to the Rashi and Devarim, taken at face value, that Chatzeros happened first in Parshas Korach is out of order. So now you know that when they sent the Meraglim, do not expect to recognize any of the Nasiim. Because the Nasiim all went down with Korach. Because Korach's men are referred to in the Chumash as Nasiei Edah. Kriye Moed Anshe Shem. So all of the Nasiim that we knew from Bamidbar, Noso, and Ba'alosecha, they went down with Korach. But if Korach happened before Shalach, so of course all these names will be fresh names. That's the Rogachov with a bird's eye view on all of this. This brings us to the end of our Parshanut. But I would just like to devote 90 seconds to the issue of the Bein HaMetzorim, which are these days that we are in. And It's very interesting that a certain path is navigated for us via the Haftorahs. For we're led into Tisha B'Av with three Haftorahs, the Tlasa de Puranusa, culminating with Chazon, and then we're led out with seven Haftorahs. And those seven Haftorahs take us right up to Rosh Hashanah, which is very interesting, because that means that as of a couple of weeks ago, you know the course of the Haftorahs from this point until Rosh Hashanah. And what that means is that the calendar is tracing a line for us between these days and taking us into Rosh Hashanah. And the question is, what an unusual way to characterize these days. They are taking us into Rosh Hashanah? The answer, says Rav Volbi, is that yes, they are. And the reason why is because on Rosh Hashanah, we stand before Hashem and we ask Him to make the world look the best that it can. Maloch HaKol HaOlam Kula B'Chodecha, that the world should be the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants it to be. In order to fully have the spring loaded for the meaning behind those requests on Rosh Hashanah, we need to have taken a good look at the world as it is, without HaKadosh Baruch Hu running it the way it should be, the way he would like to. And that really is the confrontation of Tisha B'Av. And it's very important to look about Tisha B'Av in this way, because Tisha B'Av is not a day that just goes to waste. It's not just, or these 9 days, they're not just days that we don't know what to do with them, we just let them pass. But rather these are days, and there is plenty to, unfortunately, there is plenty to reflect upon. There's plenty to ponder. The world, if you just turn on the news, it becomes Tisha B'Av straight away for 5 minutes. When was the last time anything positive happened on the news? I don't remember. No news is good news. And good news is no news. But just for those 5 minutes, it's just a reminder of what the world looks like with and those who are in charge, who don't have HaKadosh Baruch Hu within their on their map, and the results are what you hear every day. And therefore, these are days that need to be used. And Tisha B'Av, ironically, it is the ultimate irony. Of course, it's so Jewish. Tisha B'Av is called a moed, kara olai moed, and because it's a moed, we don't say tachnun on Tisha B'Av. It's within the absolute blackness of Tisha B'Av, we don't say Tachnun. And the reason why is because if Tisha B'Av has actually happened to us, it is the beginning of the road towards Rosh Hashanah. Because if we've taken a good look, and it's not a nice thing to see, but we have to see it, outside of us and inside of us, what we look like with the world not being running the way it should, we are ready, and the Haftorahs will take us now to look forward to correctly wanting and asking for all the things that we are waiting for, that should culminate and express themselves in the Geula Shelema B'Mehreh B'Yameinu.